This is episode 17 for April 2012.
You're listening to the Merry Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com.
I want to live again, and I want to look him straight in the eye, and I want to tell him what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless...
Yeah, there's a lot of bad isms floating around this world, but one of the worst is compulsion. Makeup, even in Brooklyn it's the same.
That thing had nine lives, she just spent them all.
Woo! I triple dog dare you!
I don't believe you're an angel. I think you're a demon right out of...
Don't say that.
Does someone need a hug?
Tomorrow is Christmas. It's practically here.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Sentimental hogwash.
What was the last thing you and Charlie did before you went to bed Christmas Eve?
We shared a bowl of sugar, some shots of brown liquor, played my shotguns, field dressed a cat, looked for women.
I'm the worst toy maker in the world. I'm a cotton-headed ninny muggins.
My mouth's bleeding, Bert! My mouth's bleeding! Zoot-zoot pedals! Zoot-zoot! There they are! Bert! What do you know about that? Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Hello and welcome to this, the 17th episode of the Merry Podcast, the first production of the 2012 season, as we awaken from our long winter slumber in anticipation of a whole new season. My name is Jeff Westover of MyMerryChristmas.com, the internet's longest ongoing celebration of Christmas, and home to the world's largest Christmas community. In this episode of the Merry Podcast, we explore some of the least favorite songs of Christmas. Songs that are so bad, they're good, and played again every Christmas season. The culture of Christmas lends itself to lousy but charming productions of all kinds, from Santa Claus Conquers the Martians to Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. In this episode, we give you the best of the worst of Christmas music. It is all part of what we do at Merry Christmas Radio, broadcasting now in HD year-round on our own dedicated stream, available without commercial break or monetary tie-in. To tune in, click on the links at MyMerryChristmas.com and MerryChristmasRadio.com. Also in this episode, we take an early look at the decorating trends for Christmas 2012 and what you can expect to be the hottest items for decking your halls this year. We will discuss the Christmas calendar coming up at My Merry Christmas and talk about some of the traditional features we celebrate with each season as we launch this, our 21st year of making merry online. We're proud to present a special project in this episode from Mary Carey, who tells us the story of Hollywood legend Gloria Jean and talks with her about Christmas in Hollywood. But before we get to all of that, we turn to Christmas of a different flavor for the landlubbers and lowlanders of the world. We begin with a nautical look at Christmas.
Thank you.
When thinking of Christmas and the sea, one immediately turns to the traditional carol, I Saw Three Ships. The song, repeatedly made popular by interpretations in modern recording, ranging from Sting to Amy Grant to traditional orchestras, is a happy tune dating back to the 17th century. But for all of its age and history, nobody really knows who wrote it, or even what it entirely means. The lyrics have confounded historians for centuries, and it is believed the song's connection to Christmas is merely a sailor's song of hope. After all, the song talks of three ships sailing into Bethlehem, a little town some 20 miles removed from the nearest body of water. Biblical stories abound of ships in the Dead Sea, but it would be impossible for one ship to even sail into Bethlehem. Some say the ships are symbolic of ships of the desert, otherwise known as camels. This rough connection at least makes a little sense, as the three Magi have widely been regarded throughout history as arriving in Bethlehem on camels. Three is a number of great significance to Christianity, and the use of it in this song may reach beyond the Magi to the Trinity, giving the song a deeper meaning when it sings of three ships sailing into Bethlehem on Christmas Day. In all likelihood, the song was likely a popular children's tune that was modified to teach Christian principles, as many carols of Christmas are. The repetitive nature of the song, the happy melody, and the clear Christian messaging made it ideal for teaching a holiday lesson to small children.
All Christmas, all year, this is Merry Christmas Radio.
Christmas at sea can largely be tied to the ancient character of Saint Nicholas, who, before morphing into a landlocked character who took to the skies, was first instead the patron saint of sailors and of ships. This largely came about due to a miracle credited to Nicholas while he was Bishop of Myra. As the legend goes, the land round about was suffering from a 3-year famine, and in an effort to provide food for the starving citizens, Nicholas approached the captains of sea vessels anchored in the neighboring harbor. Knowing the holds were full of grain bound for distant customers, Nicholas approached the captains asking for 10% of their cargo, a kind of Christmas tithing, with the promise that if each ship did so, they would be accounted for full cargoes when they reached their destinations. The miracle of the story focuses on feeding the people, but for those who manned the ships, the miracle made Nicholas famous around the world. In every port, the sailors told his story, and they claimed him as their patron saint of safety on the high seas. Many ports, most notably in Greece, have icons of Nicholas surrounded by models of small ships made of silver or carved of wood. Sailors returning safely from the sea place these in gratitude to Saint Nicholas for protection received. In some places, sailors, instead of wishing one another good luck, say, "May Saint Nicholas hold the tiller." Nowhere are the influence of sailors and the message of Christmas showcased better than in the history of Christmas in the ancient and modern tropical paradise of Hawaii.
Melikilikimaka is a thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day. That's the island greeting that we send to you from the land where palm trees sway. Here we know that Christmas will be green and bright, the sun to shine by day and all the stars at night. Melikilikimaka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas to you.
The very first Christmas Day celebrated in Hawaii was in 1786 by the English sea captain George Dixon and his crew aboard the Queen Charlotte. The ship was anchored in Waimea Bay off the island of Kauai, and they celebrated with a special feast prepared for the crew and captain by cooks in the galley. In 1819, Christmas trinkets were given to island children by the English sea captain Nathaniel Portlock, followed by food gifts presented by ambassadors. Until 1837, Christmas was not celebrated regularly by the residents of the islands. This coincided with the slow reversal of the Puritan ban on Christmas celebration activities in New England. In 1856, the ruler of the Hawaiian Islands, King Kamehameha IV, proclaimed December 25th to be the official day of Thanksgiving in Hawaii. In 1858, Santa Claus made his first appearance to the Hawaiian Islands by delivering presents to Hawaiian children. Santa's Hawaiian name is Kanakaloka. Try writing that the next time you write a letter to the big guy. In 1862, Christmas Day was officially proclaimed a national holiday by King Kamehameha IV.
Kalikimaka is a wise way
to say Merry Christmas to you. Melikalikimaka is a thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas Day. That's the island greeting that we send to you from the land where palm trees sway.
Here we know that Christmas will be green and bright,
the sun to shine by day and all the stars at night. Melikalikimaka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas.
A very Merry Christmas.
A very, very Merry, Merry Christmas to you.
The northern seaport city of Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the eastern Canadian seaboard, was recently in the news for the commemorative events surrounding the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. Halifax was the city of rescue for the Titanic, and more than 100 of her victims are buried there forever, making Halifax a tourist destination for Titanic enthusiasts. But there was a time, a Christmas time in fact, when Halifax was a city rescued. It happened just 5 short years after the fateful sailing of the Titanic. On a crisp December morning in the harbor at Halifax, an empty freighter and a French munitions ship, both part of the war effort in Europe, where World War I was raging, passed each other on the narrowest part of the harbor. Somehow these two ships collided, sparking a fire aboard the munitions ship. Because they were in the narrow part of the harbor, both ships were clearly visible on two shorelines, and in the busy port, hundreds of spectators pressed their faces against the glass windows of shops, businesses, and homes. While the fire was a spectacle, they had no way of knowing that the ship on fire contained a full cargo hold of explosives. Within minutes, the highly explosive cargo of TNT, picric acid, and benzol fuel ignited, sucking more than a cubic mile of air out of the atmosphere and launching a fireball seen miles away. Nothing within 2 miles of the explosion was unaffected. Modern estimates place the force of the blast equivalent to 3 kilotons of TNT, a far cry from the 15 kilotons estimated for the atomic bomb dropped on Japan years later, but still significantly large enough to label it the largest man-made explosion in history up to that point. The explosion was so large it immediately emptied the harbor completely of all of its water, briefly exposing the seafloor for the first time ever. The blast shattered every window within 50 miles and instantly killed 1,000 people in the immediate vicinity. As the sky rained down burning pieces of the two ships, the water of a mini tsunami flooded the shoreline for miles around, creating a mess almost impossible to navigate once rescue crews arrived. To make matters worse, Halifax was under a storm watch, and within hours after the blast, rescuers had to contend with 16 inches of snow, hampering their rescue efforts. It was in this moment of crisis that word spread around the world, and the nearest large population center, Boston, Massachusetts, responded. By 10 p.m. the day of the explosion, a large relief train filled with medical supplies, food, emergency essentials, and rescue personnel was on the way, a train that literally had to dig its way through the snow to reach Halifax. Boston sent the train in the days leading up to Christmas. In fact, as the cleanup continued, they sent Christmas itself to a city population suddenly destitute of means for winter survival. By Christmas 1918, a year later, the train stopped coming because Halifax was back on its feet, thanks to the continual efforts of the good people in many churches in Boston. In a token of thanks, The city of Halifax in 1918 sent a beautiful giant Halifax fir to serve as the city of Boston's Christmas tree, a tradition that continues to this day as both Boston and Halifax remember a tragedy that happened 95 years ago this Christmas.
You're listening to the Merry Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com.
Turning away now from our focus on Christmas at Sea, we take a look now at Christmas in Hollywood of the 1930s and 40s. What follows is part of a program running currently on Merry Christmas Radio. This is our own Mary Carey interviewing Hollywood legend Gloria Jean about Christmas during that era. This program runs every Friday and Sunday. You can catch the schedule of events at our website on MerryChristmasRadio.com.
Gloria had a 30-year career in show business as an actress and a singer. She started singing on the radio as a preschooler in her hometown of Scranton, Pennsylvania, and by the age of 12, she was training for a career in opera. She was well on her way to becoming the youngest professional coloratura in opera, but before her debut, her voice coach took her to an open audition for movie producer Joseph Pasternak. Pasternak had a reputation as a star maker, and he was seeking a young girl of Gloria's age to star in a musical film based on a magazine story entitled The Underpup. Gloria's remarkable audition won her a 5-year contract with Universal Pictures. At Universal, Gloria appeared in supporting roles with Bing Crosby and W.C. Fields. As a teenager, she starred in a series of musicals that introduced up-and-coming talent like Donald O'Connor and Mel Torme. After she left Universal in 1944, Gloria performed in personal appearance tours, more movies, television, and live stage performances. Today, Gloria is retired and lives on a farm in Hawaii with her son and his family. In June of 2011, Gloria very generously allowed me to interview her for Merry Christmas Radio. For a start, I asked her to repeat a story she had told me about a special connection she has with a classic Christmas song.
That was an interesting story because Mel Torme, we worked together in a movie, and he used to come to my house quite often because I had a beautiful piano. And he'd sit and play and sing. And one day he came up and I could hear the music playing. And I said, "What's going on?" My mother said, "Oh, go on in. Mel is working on a new song. I think he's writing it." So I heard this music and Mel said, "How do you like chestnuts roasting on an open fire?" And then he started the song.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose.
And I said, "Mel, I love that. That's going to be beautiful. Oh, I'm glad you like it. It's going to be a song I'm getting ready." And he was all excited because he said, "The song is going to be a classic, and I'm very excited about it because Nat King Cole is going to do the recording of it." It's history from then on. Who wouldn't know that song?
Throughout Gloria's life, Christmas has been a very special event. We'll hear more of her recollections about Christmas in Hollywood in a minute. But first, let's have another song from Gloria. This is another song from the short subject Jingle Bells. You'll hear a male quartet in this selection that may sound familiar if you're an old-time radio fan. They're the Sportsmen, who sang for years on the Jack Benny program. The bass singer is Thurl Ravenscroft, who later became famous for "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch." Here's Gloria Jean in a Christmas medley of Jingle Bells and O Tannenbaum.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open
around the fireplace and keep our friendship glowing.
Outside the snow.
That was Gloria Jean, who was our special guest on this edition of Merry Christmas Radio. Now, that was in 1941 when you were 15 years old, but I understand that you came to Hollywood in December 1938 when you were 12 years old. Weren't you in the annual Santa Claus Lane Parade that year even before you began work on your first movie?
Yes, I was, and that was quite a thrill for me. They had the streets were lined with Christmas trees. My mother was so disappointed because she liked the snow because we were from Pennsylvania. And she said, "You call this Christmas?" Well, to me it was Christmas. And they put me up on the float and I rode with Santa. I didn't care whether it snowed or not. It was very special to me.
That had to be exciting, riding with Santa almost as soon as you got to Hollywood. Being in a movie studio at that young age must have been exciting. What was it like to be working at Christmas time in a Hollywood film studio?
It was a special time. You never knew when the surprises were coming, when the gifts were coming. And they always had a big party with Santa all dressed up. And it was very exciting. I think that's why Christmas has always been my favorite time of year.
That does sound special. Did you ever receive a special gift from a co-star or someone you worked with?
Oh, I sure did. W.C. Fields was a very quiet man, and people said that he didn't do much for anybody, such as we're talking about gifts. But he always said to me when we worked together, "You're a sweet little girl, but your hands are always so cold. I don't know, we're going to have to do something about that." So when the picture was over, this beautiful gift came to me. And I thought, what in the world is this? And I opened it up, and it was a muff. And it was pure sable, and a card on it saying, "This will keep your hands warm. Love, W.C. Fields." I have that to this day, and it's very, very beautiful fur, and I really treasure that gift.
That certainly sounds like a side of W.C. Fields that most people are unaware of. That would have been in December 1941, when the United States entered World War II. During the war, did you and the other stars do anything special for the servicemen during the holidays?
They went all out for the soldiers. Every one of them. Even my hospital tour, they had the wards decorated with Christmas trees. And the servicemen, they all wanted to hear Silent Night. And, of course, I would sing the Lord's Prayer, which the soldiers absolutely adored, especially at that time of year. It was a very special time for the soldiers.
All Christmas, all the time.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas Radio!
Last Christmas, we launched our first ever Top 100 of Christmas, a new tradition here at Merry Christmas Radio. And what we learned off the bat was that not everyone appreciates the same kind of Christmas music. As the votes came in, especially as it got closer to Christmas, the opinions for and against certain pieces of music flew with critical sharpness, not commonly associated with anything Christmas-related. A curious note about the 2011 season was the inclusion of Justin Bieber's new Christmas song titled Mistletoe. The song saw an almost instant surge in popularity the moment it was released, followed by a coordinated campaign against it in the weeks just before Christmas. We predict that Mr. Bieber's song of last year will fade into obscurity, as many do, but there are some terrifically terrible songs of Christmas that get played a lot every year, and they're so bad, they're good. Here now are the top five, or the bottom five, depending upon how you look at it, annoying songs of Christmas as revealed by our surveys of Christmas 2011. Starting off from the golden age of modern Christmas pop that brought us the likes of White Christmas and I'll Be Home for Christmas comes this novelty song, first recorded and made famous by Spike Jonze. The song was originally written in less than 30 minutes by a second grade teacher in Smithtown, New York, who noticed that almost all of his students were missing one or two teeth.
All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth. My two front teeth. See my two front teeth. Gee, if I could only have my two front teeth, then I could wish you Merry Christmas. It seems so long since I could say Sister Susie sitting on a thistle. Every time I try to speak, all I do is whistle. All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth. My two front teeth. See my two front teeth? Gee, if I could only have...
Novelty songs tend to be some of the most popular and most hated of all Christmas music. This next song won 3 Grammy Awards in 1958 for Best Comedy Performance, Best Children's Recording, and Best Engineered Record. It was so successful that folks got sick of it. Thankfully for some today, the song gets heard just one time a year these days. Here's Alvin, Simon, and Theodore singing Christmas,
All right,
Don't Be Late.
Ready to sing your song?
I'll say we are. Yeah, let's sing it now.
Okay, Simon?
Okay.
Okay, Theodore?
Okay.
Okay, Alvin? Alvin? Alvin!
Okay! Christmas, Christmas time is near. Time for toys and time for cheer. We've been good, but we can't last. Hurry, Christmas, hurry fast. Want a plane that moves the loop. Me, I want a hula hoop. We can hardly stand the wait. Please, Christmas, don't be late.
Our next worst favorite comes from hitmaker Elton John. This song, produced at the height of Elton Mania in 1973, hit number 23 in the UK but never hit the Billboard Top 100 in America. We received an email about this song last Christmas, voting it not only the worst song with the worst lyrics, but condemning it as proof positive that Elton stepped into something, but it wasn't Christmas.
Welcome to my Christmas song.
This next song is not only wildly unpopular, it is likely the most divisive song on our annual survey. Many, many people, mostly women, I might add, love this song. but a vocal majority, mostly men, I might add, detest this song. The song is a modern creation written in 2001 by a Christian vocal group. It tells the story of a man who, while shopping on Christmas Eve, notices a boy in line in front of him who wants to buy shoes for his dying mother so that she can look her best when she meets Jesus later that night. This song, titled The Christmas Shoes, draws tears no matter which way you feel about it.
There I stood in another line, trying to buy that last gift or two. Not really in the Christmas mood. Standing right in front of me was a little boy waiting anxiously, pacing round like little boys do. And in his hands he held a pair of shoes. And his clothes were worn and old. He was dirty from head to toe. And when it came his time to pay, I couldn't believe what I heard him say. Sir, I wanna buy these shoes for my mama, please. It's Christmas Eve and these shoes are just her size. Could you hurry, sir? Daddy says there's not much time. You see, she's been sick for quite a while, and I know these shoes will make her smile, and I want her to look beautiful if Mama meets Jesus tonight.
For as bad as all of these songs are, each of them pales in comparison to this one, the number one worst song of Christmas according to our voters. Now, like all of these songs, we give it airplay on Merry Christmas Radio because for some, it's so bad it's good, and it isn't just Christmas without it. Penned in 1979 about a drinking grandma who can't escape Santa's sleigh on Christmas Eve, here's Elmo and Patsy singing Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer, walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe she'd been drinking too much eggnog, and we begged her not to go. But she forgot her medication, and she staggered out the door into the snow. When we found her Christmas morning at the scene of the attack, she had hoof prints on her forehead and incriminating claws marks on her back. Grandma got run over by a reindeer, walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. Now we're all so proud of Grandpa, he's been taking this so well. See him in there watching football, drinking beer and playing cards with Cousin Mel. It's not Christmas without Grandma. All the family's dressed in black, and we just can't help but wonder, should we open up her gifts or send them back?
Send them back!
Grandma got run over by a reindeer, walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandma, we believe. Now the goose is on the table, and the pudding made of fig, ah, and the blue and silver candles that would just have matched the hair in Grandma's wig. I've warned all my friends and neighbors,
better watch out for yourself. They should never give a license to a man who drives a sleigh and plays with elves.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve.
Now you can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandma, we believe.
Sing it, Grandpa.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe.
This is the time of year where serious Christmas organizers, lighting enthusiasts, and do-it-yourselfers all look for what will be new and exciting in Christmas decorating trends. Christmas tends to cling to traditional designs in most places, and that is a trend that will never change. But for those seeking an edge or looking for something unique to tweak their Christmas decorating with in 2012, we've seen several emerging trends in the marketplace. At the top, and fitting nicely with traditional decor, the reemergence of natural elements of ancient holiday decorating is the hottest trend this year. This means natural pine boughs, pine cones, berries, and even the use of cardinals or other birds to accent traditional decorations. Bridging that trend will be the expanded emphasis on ice as a theme in 2012, especially in holiday lighting. Cool, frosty, snow-laden displays, especially popular in warm areas of the South, are predicted to dominate many outdoor displays in 2012. Speaking of lighting, a growing trend from 2011 is expected to continue to pick up steam this year in the use of candle lanterns, especially for indoor decorating. Candle lanterns are considered appropriately Christmas because they can safeguard an open flame while reflecting soft yellow light in multiple directions. The great thing about candle lanterns is that many suppliers are making them available now year-round, and some are repurposing them for use during other holidays. It's quite easy to imagine how this is possible with Halloween and Thanksgiving. The use of LED Christmas lights expanded about 25% in most markets last year, mostly spurred by moderate price decreases versus previous years. The color gold will be hot in 2012 with LED lights, mostly because gold will be the dominant color across most decor lines to be showcased this summer. Gold glitter, gold ornaments, gold highlight snowflakes, and other reflective surfaces will cool recent trends in blue and red as the most popular colors of Christmas in light and decor in 2012. For crafters, this year will be all about edible and environmentally friendly decor, especially for the variety that goes on the Christmas tree. Some speculate this may be politically driven because it is an election year, and others tie it back to a resurgent appreciation for the 1970s in Christmas decoration for 2012. And finally, keeping in tune with our own theme here on the Merry Podcast in this episode, an emerging trend even in inland areas is Christmas with a nautical theme, as folks will be accenting decor with lighted ship models, seafaring Santas, and ornaments with the sea theme. This is driven by the fact that 2012 is the Chinese zodiac year of the Black Water Dragon, which is ripe with images of fish, turtles, seashells, starfish, and frogs. These trends are showcased now in many specialty retailers already, with mass merchants to follow in the late summer as usual. For more on breaking trends in Christmas decorating 2012, please visit MyMerryChristmas.com. Please stop by the Merry Forums often in the month of May as we roll out plans for celebrating Christmas 2012. We're working on the calendar now for our annual exchanges, the Christmas Top 100, another world's largest Christmas party, and even a few events for Christmas in July. Be sure to catch the full program of Mary Carey's conversation with Gloria Jean on Merry Christmas Radio. There is much, much more to that feature. It runs every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern and every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Merry Christmas Radio. And join us next time here on the Merry Podcast as we explore Christmas in warmer climates, a history of Christmas at the White House, and a review of our plans online for Christmas this year. As we leave you now, we thank all the folks who contribute to the Merry Podcast. Most notable in this episode is Mary Carey and Gloria Jean, but we also thank Mannheim Steamroller, John Schmidt, Bing Crosby, Elmo and Patsy, New Song, Elton John, The Chipmunks, Spike Jones, Phyllis Taylor Sparks, and Kenny G. For MyMerryChristmas.com, Merry Christmas Radio, and all the associated websites of the Merry Network, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.